Welcome, everyone. Today we're getting into a really profound sermon that you shared with us. It's called Love Remains.
Mm-hmm.
And it tackles, well, maybe the single most important question ever asked in the New Testament. A legal expert asked Jesus, "What's the greatest commandment?"
It really is the ultimate question. And our goal here is to unpack why, when life gets complicated or confusing, the answer is always to return to this one essential truth.
The truth of love.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's unpack this. The sermon starts with a pretty stark warning, actually. It says that sometimes trying to follow God perfectly, you know, through rules and zeal, it can actually push us further away.
Right. We get so focused on the checklists, on the procedures, that we lose the actual point.
We end up looking a lot like the Pharisees that Jesus was always confronting.
And that's the real danger here. Jesus didn't get rid of the law. He fulfilled it.
Yeah.
He showed that every rule, every prophecy, everything in Scripture really just hangs on two pillars.
And when all is said and done, love is what remains.
That's it.
So let's start right there at the foundation. We're talking about Matthew 22, the first and greatest commandment. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind.
And the second, which Jesus says is like the first, is to love your neighbor as yourself.
What's so fascinating to me is how he links them. I mean, why are they so tightly connected? You have this vertical relationship with an unseen, perfect God.
And then this horizontal one with, you know, a messy, visible, often difficult human being.
Exactly. And in some ways, loving the unseen God feels easier, doesn't it?
It does.
Because that relationship doesn't have to deal with daily friction or arguments about money or different political views.
That's the key. The sermon explains that they're really two sides of the same coin. Your love for the unseen God has to be proven, it has to be verified, by how you treat the visible neighbor right next to you.
So if I claim to have this deep spiritual love for God, but I'm constantly ignoring or, you know, being hostile to the person in my community,
and the math just doesn't add up.
The horizontal brokenness reveals that the vertical claim is pretense.
Precisely. And it works the other way, too. If our love for our neighbor isn't rooted in a love for God, it can just become, well, temporary charity. It lacks that deep sacrificial quality.
So what does it actually mean, then, to love the unseen God? The sermon says it means obeying his commands. But here's the part that really got me.
And I think I know where you're going.
That obedience puts human reconciliation before religious ritual.
Yes, we see it so clearly in Matthew chapter 5. Jesus says, if you're at the altar about to make an offering, the highest act of worship, and you suddenly remember your brother has something against you, you have to stop.
Stop everything.
Leave the gift right there. Go and reconcile with your brother, and then you can come back and make your offering.
Wow. That is so disruptive to how we normally think about piety. It means my personal worship is basically invalid if my human relationships are broken.
It changes everything. It means neighbor love isn't optional. It's essential for God love to even exist.
You can't separate them. You can't try to climb a ladder to God while you're stepping on the people he made.
You can't. And that sets the stage for what happens when we try.
So let's look at that breakdown. The sermon uses these really powerful biblical stories to show the tragedy when that love fractures. First up is the elder brother in the prodigal son parable.
Right. The elder brother is the guy who does everything right. He's obedient. He stays home. He works hard. He thinks he loves his father perfectly.
But when his broken brother comes home, his true heart is exposed.
All that obedience hadn't produced love. It had produced resentment, entitlement.
And the sermon points to that one chilling line. The father says, "Your brother has returned."
And how does he reply?
He says, "This son of yours has returned." He completely distances himself.
That detail is just devastating. He's not just rejecting his brother, he's rejecting his father's heart, which is full of joy. His obedience was just a trepidation.
His love for the father was completely negated by his failure to love his neighbor, who in this case was his own brother.
And that connects right back to that warning about the Pharisees. Strict rules without empathy just lead to judgment and isolation.
And when that isolation goes unchecked, it gets much, much worse.
It escalates, and the ultimate example the sermon gives is Cain and Abel.
Right. So Cain makes an offering to God, a vertical act of worship.
But just a short time later, he murders his brother Abel out of pure jealousy and hatred.
The religious act was performed, but the hatred was still there. That supposed God love wasn't real enough to stop him from killing the very person God loved.
The danger is so stark. When neighbor love is absent, the result is destruction. It proves that trying to have the vertical without the horizontal isn't just empty, it's deadly.
Okay. But that makes the command feel huge,
yeah.
almost impossibly heavy, especially when Jesus says to love your enemy. I mean, my first reaction is to just give up.
And that's a natural reaction. It is a high mountain. But the sermon is clear. You don't achieve this kind of Christ-like love in one big jump.
It's a process.
It's a slow process of small, daily acts of obedience. You have to climb the low mountains first before you even think about Everest.
So we're not starting with Everest. We're starting with choosing kindness over anger with a family member, or patience over frustration with a coworker.
That's the path. And we have these powerful stories that prove Everest is actually conquerable. Think about Sun Yang Won.
The man who adopted the person who murdered his two sons.
I mean, can you even imagine? Or Corrie Ten Boom, who came face to face with a guard from the concentration camp where she was brutalized, and she forgave him.
Those stories.
Mm-hmm.
They're just proof that obeying this command isn't some abstract ideal. It's possible for human beings with God's help.
Absolutely. And we have to understand the personal stakes here. The sermon quotes from 1 John, which says that not loving is the same as remaining in death.
So loving our enemy isn't just about their well-being. It's about our own salvation, our own life.
It's an internal state of being you have to cultivate to truly live.
Which brings us to the final evolution of this command. Jesus doesn't just say, love your neighbor as yourself. He gives a new commandment.
He does. In John 13, he says, love one another as I have loved you.
And that just raises the bar completely.
Oh, the bar is officially raised. As I have loved you sets the standard at the cross. It's unconditional, sacrificial, self-giving love.
So we can't demand reasons anymore. We can't wait for someone to deserve our love. We have to love the way Christ did, even when it costs us something.
And that love can't just be a feeling or a theory. The sermon is very insistent on this. It has to be shown through sincere action, through act and truth.
So what does that look like? You know, in the day-to-day, most of us aren't in a situation where we're adopting our enemy's child.
It's in the micro details. It's being truly sensitive to what another person needs, which means you have to be paying attention.
Right. It's not passive.
Not at all.
Yeah.
It's actively choosing not to ignore someone who needs help, even if it's inconvenient. It's waiting for someone, accompanying them through a hard time.
It sounds like patience is a huge part of it.
A massive part. It's showing consideration, maybe enduring a personal loss or inconvenience for their sake.
Mm.
It's the subtle, constant work that we often overlook.
And the power in that small, quiet work is, it's just amplified by what Jesus promises in Matthew 25.
Yes. The promise that he remembers even the smallest act of kindness, a cup of water given to the least of these, as if it were done directly to him.
It makes every small, messy act of daily love potentially monumental.
That's right.
So when we put this all together, it seems that love isn't just one priority on a long checklist.
It has to be the first priority, the foundation for everything else. It's the ultimate evidence of our faith.
The way the world is supposed to know who we are.
By our genuine act of love for one another. When we do that, we fulfill the entire law.
And we have to end with that crucial warning from the sermon, the one from 1 Corinthians 13. Even if we can speak eloquently or have all knowledge or do these incredible self-sacrificing deeds,
this love is missing.
It is utterly worthless. All our work, all our striving, it adds up to zero.
The mountain is high and the stakes are our very lives. So I encourage you, don't look at the story of Sun Yang Won today and feel overwhelmed.
Start smaller.
Much smaller. Focus on one single, concrete, small act of patience or selfless consideration. For the person closest to you, your immediate neighbor, do it today. That is how we begin to climb the high mountain of Christ-like love.